Good morning.
I am honored and excited about the opportunity to speak to you today, and I want to thank you in advance for your kind attention. And with that said, I'd like to have a brief word of prayer. Our most gracious Heavenly Father, I ask your blessing on me at this time that you help me choose my words wisely and say something that's beneficial to those here. Be with my audience and give them patience to overlook my shortcomings. And I hope that they get something good and useful out of what we have to say. In Jesus' name, amen. Earlier this week, I was working in the office, and the phone rings. I wear a Bluetooth, so I punch the Bluetooth, and over the Bluetooth comes the voice, John McCord here. Some of you may have got that call. I wish I could tell you he'd called to check on me to see how I was and how things were, but that was not the purpose of his call. He had a problem. His visiting preacher had canceled, and John had a conflict. He needed to be on an elk hunt and here in El Campo at the same time. I want you to know that I jumped all over that and told John that he did not have a problem. I'd been wanting to go elk hunting a very long time. And while I was putting my list together of what I needed and what I needed to take, he said, "Madison, I think you may need a hearing aid." And I've been accused of being a little hard of hearing before. My wife says that I don't hear good. At least I think that's what she says. But I remembered Bobby giving a talk here when he showed us how to cook pizza. And what I remember most about that particular lesson was Bobby said that you listen with your eyes. So after that lesson, Bobby, I went to Walmart and I got me a couple of hearing aids. And I put them on and I looked at that and I said, "John, just what part did I not hear?" But anyway, I think a lot of John and certainly wanted him to have that opportunity on his elk hunt. But my hearing is not what it used to be. I am getting older. My eyes don't see what they used to see. My memory is not always what it used to be. And time seems like, I know time is supposed to be a constant, right? It doesn't change. It always goes at the same pace. But the older I get, it seems like somebody's winding the clock a little faster. And this past year has been busy for me. I don't know if you've ever been so busy you thought you were ahead, but I have. I found laying on the ground, there's a rope. And I'm not sure if I've found a rope, but there's not a horse on either end of it. So maybe I lost a horse. I'm not sure. But we're getting older. I have a new dog. His name is Hank. He's a hanging tree cow dog. And Hank's getting older. He's all of 6 months now. And Hank is a male dog. And you know, when a male dog gets to be 6 months is when the veterinarian recommends that you have that little procedure. Snip, snip. Okay? And me and Hank pretty tight. I didn't have the courage, I guess, to take Hank for his procedure, so I asked my sweet wife, which she so gladly volunteered. And she said to me, I'll tell you exactly what she said. She said, "Well, Madison, he'll just be a lot happier this way." That made me extremely nervous. And I want you to know that Hank is recovering fine. He doesn't need to be on the prayer list or anything like that. But as for me, I have the uncontrollable urge to tell everyone, and I want to say it this morning from here, Charlotte, I am just like the guys on Duck Dynasty. I am happy, happy, happy. Today's story begins on June 24th, 2013. At the Smith house, or at my house, the day at that time of year begins with catching a horse and checking water. And I have a string of five horses, and they take their turn. We have Sugar and Boogers, Honey and Sunny, and Sweetness. And Sweetness, named after Walter Payton, because she has a big heart. But on June 24th, it was Sunny's day to go. And I kind of pride myself in my ability to catch my horses without feed in a large pen. That's just something I've always thought I could do. But today, Sunny did not wish to go. Sunny thought someone else should go. The other four horses figure out pretty quickly that I want Sunny. So they move to the side and stand quietly and watch as I chase Sunny. Back and forth, around and around we go. And John talked last week about people whose anger stewers and spewers. Well, my anger began to stew, and then it began to spew, and the testosterone level was way too high. You know, they got machines that test your blood pressure and your blood sugar. Some of us guys need a little machine to kind of test your testosterone and tell you that it's getting too high. Because when your testosterone gets too high, sometimes bad things can happen. So as I begin to get more and more angry at Sonny, I said, Sonny needs a lesson. So I reached and grabbed a rope. Now, a little history on me and a rope. 2009, I threw my shoulder out of joint throwing a lead rope at a horse. And I said that would never happen again because the pain was so bad. Someone asked me at the time how bad it hurt, and I said, it's a lot worse than childbirth because you never let it happen again. But I told you I was getting old. And your memory fails. And so Sonny needs to be taught a lesson. So I grab this rope. I have no idea what I'm thinking. And I begin to swing the rope. And as Sonny comes by, I throw the rope just about like that. Never had a chance of catching him. Didn't catch him. Didn't get close to catching him. And the bad part is I think Sonny laughed. And so I roll that rope up again. Now, the good Lord had done spared me once, all right? But the testosterone was climbing. And I was bound and determined I was going to catch that horse. I'm going to teach him a lesson. So I rolled and got me another loop. And I said, what I need is a little bigger loop. That's the reason I didn't catch him. I need a bigger loop. So, man, I got me a big old loop, just about like so. I got me some rubbing. And I began to swing that rope with authority. And I slung that rope. And when I slung that rope, the good Lord reached down and tapped me on the shoulder and moved that humerus bone over here where it did not belong. And I want you to know, at that moment, I regained control of my anger. I didn't care where Sonny went. Because I wanted to go somewhere else where they could put that thing back where it belonged. And that was stupid. And to borrow something from Forrest Gump, stupid is as stupid does. And while I don't think I am a stupid person, I certainly allowed my anger to let me do something stupid. It says in Proverbs chapter 14, verse 17, a quick-tempered person does foolish things. So while I was at the hospital, and what Clayton had to quit work, everybody had to quit work, everybody has to go see about me and my stupidity. We were busy anyway. But while I'm at the hospital, you have a time to reflect on the stupidity that you just done. And I thought back a brief time before I had been to Seymour, Texas, to pick up Hank. And in Seymour, Texas, there's a man named Charlie Traer who trains hanging tree cow dogs. And when we picked up Hank, he did a brief demonstration for me with a mature hanging tree cow dog. And the dog he demonstrated was named Bullet. I really don't know that the dog was named Bullet, but he looked like Bullet. And in this story, it's my story, the dog's Bullet. He gets Bullet out of his kennel. He's got 25, 30 dogs. Gets the dog over here. He's got a pen full of cows. In a very soft voice, he says, "Away from me." And the dog goes in a counterclockwise direction, gets around the cows, works back and forth, brings them all back right there to Mr. Traer, puts them right in front of him. And Mr. Traer says, in a very low voice, "That'll do." And the dog lays on the ground and the cows scatter. In a few minutes, Mr. Traer moves over here and he says, "Bullet, pass by." And the dog goes in the opposite direction, circles the cows, and brings them all back to Mr. Traer. Mr. Traer says, in a very low voice, "That'll do. That'll do." And the dog lays down, and the cows walk away. And Mr. Traer goes over to his dog and scratches him on the head. He says, "Bullet, you look thirsty. Go get a drink." And Bullet, like shot from a gun, there's a water trough about 200 yards, and he goes straight to that trough, jumps into the water, comes out the other side. And when he comes out the other side, he's on a line. And I'm telling you, if he keeps coming, that man could be killed because this dog is coming. And when he gets about a pickup length away, Mr. Traer says, "That'll do." He said it no louder than that. And that dog come to a skeet and stop like a runner at home plate. And he laid there perfectly still, waiting for the next command. And it's an impressive demonstration. But what I wanted to know from Mr. Traer, I said, how in the world do you develop that kind of relationship with a dog? Everybody I've seen around dogs, they start off saying, "Rover, Rover, Rover, dadgummit, you better get over here. You better listen to me because I'm going to." And that's the way people talk to their dogs. A lot of people talk to their dogs. But Mr. Traer said, "Madison, if you want the dog to listen to your regular voice, never raise it. Never raise your voice. The dog has excellent hearing. He heard you the first time. The second thing he said was never repeat yourself. Because the same thing, the dog heard you the first time. And all you do by raising your voice and repeating yourself is discredit the first thing you said." And the last thing he said was, "Madison, no matter how good you are, no matter what happens, sometimes things go wrong. And sometimes the dog doesn't listen." And he says, "When things go wrong, here's the hard part. Shut your mouth and correct your position." So I took those three things and I thought about what I had done with Sonny. Did I raise my voice? Oh, yeah, lots of times. I said some things to Sonny that you can't say in here and probably shouldn't be said anywhere else. All right? I'm not proud of that, but that's what happened. I did raise my voice. I repeated myself many times, many blank threats about what is fixing to happen to him if he didn't do what I said. But now, after things had gone wrong and I'd gone away, it was time to correct my position. So what I did, I went and bought a round pen. And I'll tell you that the cost of that round pen compared to the medical expense on that morning was basically non-existent. And I constructed a round pen. And with horses, there's something magical about a round pen. And you take advantage of the horse's natural instinct to run away. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to run. So you put the horse in a round pen, you put yourself in the middle, and you let the horse run. You're basically in charge of general direction, and that's about it. But what you do, you let the horse run, and it triggers the cognitive side of his brain. And pretty soon he says, you know, I'm doing a really good job of running away from that crazy white man, but he ain't getting no further away. Just standing, it's nothing's happening. I'm just going around in circles, and it's pointless. And the day I put Sonny in the round pen, it was a grand total of 12 minutes until he put his head in the halter. Me standing in the middle. That's it. Corrected my position and saved all of that pain. But the round pen has many applications that transfer over to our life. And God puts us in the round pen of life. And when you're in the round pen of life, you know, there ain't no way out, okay? You're here, and you're going to be here till you die. You can't escape. There will be various obstacles in your round pen, and you're either going to deal with them or have a miserable life. But the round pen forces the horse to face his problems and forces the horse to check with the guy in the middle. Check with the guy in the middle. And in the round pen of life, for us, okay, God's in the middle. God's in the middle. So if you're in the round pen and things don't seem to be going too good in your life, check the guy in the middle. See about which direction he wants you to go. The other thing about the round pen is that the middle is so constant and so consistent. No matter what that horse does, no matter what he does, there I am. I'm right in the middle. He can go round and round. That's all right. But no matter what he does, no matter how stupid he gets, the guy in the middle is, and you're safe in the middle because he's got other places to go. And that's the same way it is with your relationship with God. Okay, God's anchored in the middle. And no matter what you do, good, bad, in between, and we all do some of all. But God is anchored in the middle. And always, always consistent. Remember, one of the things you have to remember when you're working with animals is that obedience, though a necessary part of the process, is not actually the ultimate goal. Obedience is not the ultimate goal. I want the horse or the dog to do what I say, but I don't want that to be the only thing he does. I don't want a dog that I have to tell him everything, or a horse that I have to tell him everything. I want the horse to learn to read my mind, think things through, and help me. That's what I want the horse to do. And that's what the round pen is supposed to develop. Now, you have various roles in the round pen. Sometimes you're the guy in the middle. If you're the head of your family, you're the guy in the middle. Everything's going around. You're in charge of basic direction. People are going to make decisions. They got things they got to do and different decisions to make. You're in charge of general direction. You can change directions. But you're in the middle. You're in charge of direction. If you're on the rail, then you're busy about what the guy in the middle wants. And as you go through life, you spend time in the middle. You spend time on the rail. The younger you are, the more time you spend on the rail. And as you get older, you move to the middle. We've had a little malfunction here. That's okay. I want to share with you this morning something that was presented to me. And the setting is football. And it's the end of a football season. And we all know how important football is in Texas, and we all know that El Campo ventured all the way to the state finals a year ago. And football can be a big part of people's lives. But the setting here is football at the end of a season. But the message is a lot deeper than that. And I want to share that with you this morning, and not that I think that, or would ever think that I've been a better father than anyone else or have better kids than anyone else. I wish I could tell you that I'd always treated my kids correctly, okay? But my kids have been mistreated sometimes, just like my horses have gotten mistreated sometimes. I was not always perfect, okay? Sometimes the expectations were too high. Sometimes maybe too low. And I would never represent that my kids always made even good choices, not necessarily always the choices that I wanted. But in this picture is in 2005, and the Rice Raiders have just played their last football game against Hutto Hippos. I didn't know there were hippos in Texas, but it was the Hutto Hippos. And just like yesterday, the good team doesn't always win, okay? And the day I get over the Rice Raider loss to Hutto Hippos, I will let you know, but as of this point, I'm still steaming about the loss to Hutto. But as a kid finishes his senior year in football, they walk off the field for the final time. And it's a very emotional time. And the picture was taken as Hunter walked off the field, and in the later days, he wrote this to me. And I would like to read it to you. Unless your eyes are a lot better than mine, you probably can't read that. But that player right there, it says Smith, and his number is 52. And the reading is like this. Every time I took the field, I felt you deep inside. It was from you I gained all my strength, my will, my pride. Each time I came to the line and firmly gripped the ball, I could hear your voice say, "Son, give it your all." On every snap and clashing of a pad, the opponent felt the fury of a warrior and his dad. I proudly say I was part of the mighty blue, but my core team consisted of only two. Although it was through my legs, arms, and chest, it was our hearts that pushed me to be my best. In every game we were in, we knew we could win. From whistle to whistle, we never quit. We were the real men of true grit. After all the magnificent games we'd won, we were finally beaten, so we were done. As I left the field and peered into the skies, I could feel your tears drip from my eyes. In this final walk I had, I was proud I shared it with the man I call Dad. In Proverbs 15:20, it says, "A wise son brings joy to his father." In my time with my dad, I told him many times that I hope someday my kids think about me the way I thought about him. My wish came true. So this week, in your walk through the round pen of life, I ask that you recognize your position, whether you're on the rail or in the middle. If you're in the middle, give clear directions. Be sure the horse knows which way you want him to go. And if you're on the rail and things seem somewhat confused, check the guy in the middle. That's all I have this morning. If there's anything we can do to help you this morning, ask that you come. Thank you, Chuck.